The fictional worlds of Christopher Paul Curtis could hardly be more different from the fantasy world of Harry Potter. Curtis writes historical fiction. His first book, The Watsons Go to Birmingham, 1963, is set during the civil rights struggle. His new novel, Bud, not Buddy, is about a young black kid caught in the Great Depression. Bud is hungry and homeless, sleeping under trees in the winter. At one point, he wakes up and runs half a mile to a bread line, only to find that it stretches out for blocks by the time he reaches the last man in line.
I walked up to get behind him. He said, "Line's closed. These here folks are the last ones." He pointed at a man standing next to a woman who was carrying a baby. I said, "But sir." He said, "But nothing. Line's closed. These here folks are the last ones." It was time to start lying. If I didn't get any food now, I'd have to steal something out of someone's garbage, or I wouldn't be able to eat until the mission opened for supper. I said, "Sir, I..." The man raised his hand and said, "Look, kid, everybody's got a story and everybody knows the rules. The line closes at 7 o'clock. How's it fair to these people who've been waiting here since 5? You sleep until 7:15, then come busting down here expecting to eat. You think you've got some kind of special privilege just because you're skinny and raggedy? Look in the line. There's lots of folks look just like you. You ain't the worst."
Bud, not Buddy, is not your ordinary children's book. But Christopher Paul Curtis thinks kids should learn about important historic events, like the Civil Rights Movement and the Great Depression. He told Judith Strasser that Bud's hard life is grounded in history.
Many, many children, some as young as 8 years old, either left their homes or were thrown out because there just was not enough food to feed them, and they set out on life on the road, riding the rails or going from place to place, begging, doing things like that. So I don't think Bud's life is really uncommon for that time.
He's, what, 10?
10 years old.
And he's off on his own. I mean, he gets kicked out of a foster home.
Mm-hmm. And refuses to go back to the orphanage. So he figures that he's going to walk across the state of Michigan to find the man that he thinks is his father. And he's on his own, yes.
You really write about difficult subjects, difficult times. Your first book was about another difficult time for black people. It was about the civil rights movement. And in that book, there's a young girl who's in a church in Birmingham when it's bombed. Tell me about the Watson family that goes to Birmingham and why they went to Birmingham.
The Watsons Go to Birmingham 1963 is a story about, not so much about the civil rights movement, I don't feel. I feel it's a story about a family. And it starts in Flint, Michigan. There's a daughter and two sons. And a 13-year-old son, he's into being cool and skipping school. And he's just a kind of a semi-juvenile delinquent. And his parents have tried everything with him. And they decide that what they need to do is to ship him to his grandmother's house to spend the summer in Birmingham, because the grandmother is known as a strict disciplinarian. And of course, at the time, there was a great civil rights struggle going on in Birmingham. And the daughter is involved in a bombing, much like the bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church that took place.
This is a really tough subject for adults to deal with. And I'm wondering how you do make them into stories for kids, a subject like the bombing of a church, or a boy who's trying to find his father, who's really essentially homeless and mm-hmm. trying to find his father.
I think that what I do is don't concentrate on the difficulty of the situation. Instead, concentrate on the child and the child's reaction. One of the things that I'm very grateful for in the Watsons Go to Birmingham is that before the bombing takes place, people get to know the family. Then when the bombing comes, it's not like they're approaching the story from the outside and there's this bombing. It's like a member of your family or somebody that you know, a friend, is in danger.
Is it the emotion that you want children to get, or is it the historical facts that this sort of thing really happened, or...
Neither is the goal, I don't think. I think that knowing about the struggle is important, but that's not the point of the book. If you don't grab that child first, if you don't get their attention and don't make them feel like they're not going to be hit in the head with a lesson here, you know, in a lot of books you can see, oh, here comes the lesson. I think you can hear it rolling in. that's what I try to do. I try to make the story the most important thing. And then you can, once you've got the child into the story, then other things can be brought in and the child can look at it from a different perspective.
You have a very unusual background for a writer. You worked 15 years, was it? 13 years on the assembly line.
9/15/72 to 9/22/85.
Oh, you have the dates pinned down.
Oh, yes, because I look at the 9/15/72 as kind of my first day in prison, and the other date is my date of freedom, so.
Had you always wanted to write? Were you wanting to write as you were doing that?
No, writing never was a goal of mine. I wanted to be everything else that a child wants to be. I wanted to be a football player. I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a saxophone player. But writer never was on that list. And working in the factory was kind of a thing that made me a writer, because I was writing while I was in the factory, while I was actually in the factory, and it took me away from the job that I hated. So, you know, I say I hate it, but in a lot of ways I'm grateful, because I think it is what turned me into a writer.
When you say that you were writing while you were on the job.
I hung doors, and it was a really physical job, and there were two of us that did, and we do every other job. And in our 18-year-old wisdom, we figured that instead of doing every other job and standing up for 10 hours, it'd be a lot easier if I did 30 in a row, then my friend did 30 in a row. And that way you'd have a half hour off the line every hour. And I found that when I wrote, it further took me away from the line. It took me out of the factory. Time would fly when I would sit and write. And I wasn't writing fiction at the time. I wasn't writing anything really that was worth reading. Mostly I was writing things like, I hate my foreman's guts. Things along that line. But I was, the actual writing is what I think was important, the practice of putting pen to paper.
What's interesting is that my impression, I mean, I've never been in a factory, I have to say, but I'm impressed that you were able to do that, to say, well, I'm impressed with several things. One, I'm impressed that nobody came down on you for taking a half hour off every, you know.
Well, they tried, but.
But I'm also impressed that you could take this a half hour is a very short period of time for writing, maybe long for hanging doors, but it's very short for writing, isn't it?
That's right. It is. It is. And it helped me in that it was such a short time. You know, you just start really get going, and it's time, you know, Doug would say, hey, come on, this is your job right here. And I'd have to jump up. And it also helped me in the fact that while I was working, I was thinking about what I was going to write when I went back. And so I was writing for half an hour, but I was thinking for half an hour, the other half hour.
So do you miss the physical part of your life when you're writing, now that, you know, you're writing full time?
The physical part of hanging doors?
Yeah. I mean, do you have to do something physical in order to write now?
No. Thank God that didn't happen. No, what I do now is I go to the library and I sit in the children's section and I write for 2 or 3 hours. The physical part is not necessary. No, I don't miss the physical part of hanging doors at all.
It's interesting that you talk about writing in the children's section, because the library is a very important place for Bud, the young boy in your second book. And I get the feeling, well, I got the feeling reading the book that the library must have been important for you as you were coming up. But
true. Yeah, the library, I don't know why, but it's the only place I can write. When I wrote The Watson School to Birmingham, I'd sit in the public library and I'd write, and they weren't sure what I was doing, because when I write, I still go into the same kind of trance I was in at the factory, and I'm writing and I'm laughing out loud and I'm just having a wonderful time. And I remember when I finished The Watsons, I gave the manuscript to one of the librarians, because it's really hard to find somebody to read something that you've written that has any kind of experience. And I thought, who better than a librarian? And she took it from me, and I went back about a week later, and I walked in, and she saw me, and she started crying. And I thought, oh, wow, that's a good sign. I've made a librarian cry. So the library is very special to me, you know, and to Bud, too.
Did she help you get it published?
No. I entered a contest to get the book published. It's almost impossible to get anything read by a publishing house unless you're well known in some other field or unless you've already published something. So I entered contests, and the book didn't win the contest, but Delacourt published it anyway.
The Watsons Go to Birmingham 1963 became a big publishing success, and Christopher Paul Curtis's latest novel, Bud Not Buddy, was the first book to win both the Newbery Medal and the Coretta Scott King Award. Curtis talked with Judith Strasser.